Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
Now, Miriam Henry is with me on the show today, and thanks, Miriam, for talking to us on the programme. Will you just explain what happened last week?
So thanks for having me on. So myself and my sister were part of a trial that went on for 2 weeks and it finished on Friday. And it was in relation to sexual abuse that we suffered at the hands of our brother when we were children. And so he was sentenced on Friday, and unfortunately he received a fully suspended sentence.
Fully suspended sentence. Was he convicted?
He was convicted, yeah. He was found guilty.
Of what charges, Miriam?
So it was 5 sample counts of abuse under Section 2 of the, I think it's sexual assault contrary to Section 2. So it was sample counts because it was a habitual abuse. So it's extremely difficult to put a number on it. So that's why they use the terminology sample counts. It's just to represent a group, let's say.
Can you tell me a little bit about you and your sister and what you suffered, Miriam?
So this went on when I was quite young. My brother is 6 years older than me. And he abused me, as I said. And my sister, the same. She's 3 years older than me and he's 3 years older than her. So she was a bit closer in age to him. But the abuse suffered by me went on for much longer. It just kind of became part of daily life, the same way as brushing your teeth does, or, you know, eating your breakfast. It just became part of life in my childhood. And obviously that in turn took my childhood away from me. And it wasn't until I was a teenager and I was in secondary school and, you know, you start learning about sex and relationships. Mm. Because when I was a child, I was so young, I didn't realise what was going on. I didn't understand it. But when I was a teenager in secondary school, I started to learn about sex and relationships. And it was then that I realized what had happened to me and that it was wrong. So not only did he take my childhood away from me, but he also took those teenage years away from me. And then he's also taken part of my adult life away from me as I've tried to deal with the abuse and obviously, you know, take part in these court proceedings in order to get justice in, you know, whatever form it's come in.
We might talk a little bit about the court system in a moment, Miriam, and I don't want to pry too much or ask you to relive any of what you or your sister went through. But do you remember when the abuse first happened? Do you recall?
I do, yeah.
You do. And what age roughly were you at that stage?
I was 6.
So your sister
was 12.
And your sister was 9 years of age.
Yeah, yeah. Now, she was a little bit older when it started. It wasn't going on at the same time. So she was a little bit older when it started for her. But in turn, that means that he was a little bit older. So he was certainly, in my opinion anyway, of the age where he would have known what he was doing and that it was wrong.
Was it in the family home?
It was, yeah, it was always in the family home.
And was it something that anybody was aware of, Miriam?
No, nobody was ever aware. We grew up in, you know, quite an unhappy family home. There was a lot of other issues in the home, because it's one thing to go through this as, you know, where you haven't told somebody, but it's another thing to tell somebody and they don't care.
You decide, yourself and your sister obviously both realised that this was happening to you both. When did you raise the alarm or did you speak to somebody? At what point was that, Miriam?
So myself and my sister, we never realised at the time that this was happening to both of us. It was only when we got much older, like we never discussed this at any point in our life. It was only when we got much older. I think both of us kind of had an understanding of, well, you know, if it happened to you, it probably happened to me, you know. It was 2018 when I went to the Guards for the first time. But, you know, I'd been in counselling in the Rape Crisis Centre in Waterford for about a year, I think, before that. So, you know, I had already started kind of unpacking what I had been through before I went to the Guards. So I went to the Guards in August of 2018.
I'm sure that wasn't easy either, Miriam, for you.
No, it's very traumatizing. It's very traumatic retelling the actual incidents, because, you know, obviously you have to give as much detail as you possibly can when you give your statement to the Guards. And, you know, it's very re-traumatizing to think back on all of the incidents. And I think sex is something that people, you know, a lot of people would have a difficulty discussing anyway. Never mind when you're talking about something like this. And, you know, you're sitting in an interview room and you're being asked to describe what happened to you when you were a small child. You know, like when you go through this system of giving your statement and going to court, you're there as your child self. You know, you're there at the age this happened to you. You're there at the age you realize as a teenager that this happened to you, and you're there as your adult self trying to get justice for child you, you know.
How long did the abuse last, Miriam?
It went on for about 4 years.
Until you were about the age of 10 or 11, and really when you kind
about
of...
10.
Yeah, when you realized in school that...
Well, it was much later when I realized what had happened. I was in secondary school by the time I realized what had happened. And I think for most people between the ages of 6 and 10, you don't have any concept of what this is, nor should you. You know what I mean? You have no idea what's going on. You don't even know what to tell people if you were to describe it, because you don't understand it, you know. And the fact is, it happened primarily when there was nobody else at home. So that then kind of gives you the impression of, well, this is something to keep a secret because it's not being done when anybody else is around.
Do you recall the impact that this had on you, Miriam, when you realized at those teenage years that this wasn't right and that this was so wholly wrong?
Well, the main impact this has had on my life is just a complete lack of trust. I don't trust anybody. I find it very difficult to trust people. Even now, it's very difficult when, you know, something like this happens when you're a child. And, you know, it's one thing for it to happen outside of the family, but when your trust is broken like this by a family member, you then begin to think, well, if my own family would do this to me, strangers out in the world would do much worse. And you start building walls up around yourself and pushing people away. And, you know, you lose relationships because of this. And it is very difficult to build relationships because of this. But trust is the main thing for me. I have such difficulty trusting people even now still. It's very difficult. That's probably one of the biggest emotions that I deal with.
In the aftermath,
there's obviously a lot of upset as well.
Of course,
you know, there's like I've lost, you know, my childhood essentially. I've also lost my parents in this. My mother has taken the side of my brother, and in fact, she sat in court every day for the 2 weeks of the trial, supporting him, as did his wife. So it's obviously very upsetting to lose the person, particularly when it's your mother. You know, she gave birth to me. She brought me into this world, and to see her turn her back on me is obviously very hurtful. I haven't had a relationship with her now in many years because of this. So, you know, I've lost my childhood. I've lost, you know, my parents. And I've also lost, you know, there's smaller things like, I have no pictures of myself as a child. I think I have maybe 3 or 4. And that in turn, again, takes away even more memories from you. Where people might have photos up around their house of happy memories, you know, I don't have that. And it is a very difficult time to remember anyway. I don't want to think about that time in my life, because even the happy memories are overshadowed by, well, what else was going on in the background when that picture was taken, you know. But I've lost an awful lot because of this. And it feels like a punishment for seeking justice for my child self, you know.
When I suppose the point came that you realised that something was very wrong and this wasn't right, Miriam, what was happening to you, Have you had or did you have any, you know, communication or relationship with your brother in the aftermath of this?
No. So I left my parents' house when I was 18. I left very quickly after my leaving cert because I didn't want to be in that house anymore. And like that house is just full of bad memories. So I think in the last 19 years, I'm 37 now. And in the last 19 years, I've been back to that house 3 times. And I, the last time I saw my brother, aside from the trial, was, it could have been maybe 12 or 13 years ago. I would have had a very limited relationship with him after I left my parents' house. He does have 2 daughters who are obviously my nieces. And there was a period of time where I had tried to have some sort of relationship just for the sake of my nieces, but it just got more and more difficult to the point where I just cut it off completely. So it's probably about maybe 12 or 13 years, maybe even a little bit longer since I would have had any relationship with him.
You went to the Guards in August 2018. Did you and your sister go together, Miriam?
No, so I went to the Guards in Waterford. I live in Waterford and I went to the Guards in Waterford myself. And at the time, my sister didn't want to proceed herself. She just didn't feel strong enough to do it at the time. As I said at the beginning, this is an extremely traumatizing process to go through. And then the stories you see in the news of you go through this system and at the end, someone gets a fully suspended sentence. It's a lot to grapple with when you're thinking about going to the Guards because you're thinking, am I even going to get justice at the end of this, you know? So I went to the Guards in August of 2018 and I think my sister went to the Guards. I think it was possibly early 21, I think, or maybe late 21. I think it was 2021.
Okay.
Or possibly even 2022. I'm not certain on the year, but it wasn't at the same time as me, essentially, anyway.
So you went, obviously, to the Guards. You reported what happened. You made your statements. You went through all of that. When were you... How did you find the going through the court system, Miriam?
Oh, it was awful. Absolutely awful. Like, obviously, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or I'm not sure if many of the listeners will be aware of this, but the trial has to happen in the area where the abuse happened. So we lived in Kerry at the time. We lived just outside Tralee when we were children. So not only did I have the trauma of obviously going through this trial, but I then had the trauma of travelling back to this area that I haven't been to, as I said, in many, many years. And that in itself brings back a lot of bad memories. You know, you're traveling through this town that you lived in at the time, you know, you lived near at the time you were being abused. And that brings up a lot of bad memories as well. And in addition to that, the person who's more likely to have stayed in that area is not going to be me, the victim. I'll want to have gotten out of that area as quickly as possible. And that's exactly what I did. I left very quickly after I did my leaving cert. Whereas my brother, he lives in Lixnaw, which is in County Kerry as well. And it's maybe a half an hour drive from the courthouse. Whereas both myself and my sister had to travel from our homes. I live in Waterford and she lives in Dublin. So we had to travel down to Tralee. We had to stay there. We were staying in accommodation in Killarney. And we were traveling to and from the courthouse every day. We had no support with us. And obviously, as I said already, very upsetting and angering, to be honest with you, to see our mother in court every day supporting our brother. She wouldn't even look at us. And the only time where she made any sort of eye contact with me was when I was giving my evidence in the witness box. And then just the core process in itself, it's very slow, which we all know that's just the way things move. And we were down there from Monday until Friday of the first week of July. And then we were down there from Monday until Friday of the week just gone, the week beginning the 8th. And so it went on for a full 2 weeks when we had been told it was only going to go on for 3 days. And we had a lot of expense staying down there. And again, you're away from your home. At the end of all of this trauma during the day, you don't even get to go home and sleep in your own beds. You know, you have to try and figure out where you're going. I used to drive back to our accommodation, and whereas my brother got to go home to his own bed every night, got to go home to his family every night. And that in itself is obviously very upsetting, just the distance and the expense that we had to go through during that week. And then obviously you're reliving all of the incidents of abuse every day, because even when you're finished giving your evidence and you're finished being cross-examined, then the guard has to get into the witness box and bring the core process through the guard interviews done by my brother. And they're talking about all the different evidence, basically. So you're just reliving this trauma that you've been through every day, every
and
single
no
day.
And no support
it's very difficult.
With you,
no.
With you there.
No. So the person who we did have with us for the full 2 weeks, and the support we did get from this person is amazing. We had a lady from the Kerry Rape and Sexual Abuse Centre attend court with us every day. So she's basically an advocate, and she attends court with you. She brings you to and from the courtroom. And Tralee Courthouse is extremely fortunate to have a victim support room upstairs, which is away from everybody else. You need a passcode to get in the door. There's a separate toilet up there, so you're not bumping into anybody you don't want to see. And you're also not running the gauntlet of, you know, perhaps sharing the public toilet with everybody else who's in the courtroom that day or in the courthouse that day.
Okay, so it's actually
matters.
Well-equipped in Tralee and as
yeah,
much as
and,
it can
and,
be. For...
And unfortunately, that isn't the case in all courthouses.
Okay.
So prior to them having this victim support room, which was gifted to them by the court service, I think about 7 or 8 years ago, you would have had to just sit in the foyer with the accused there. Well, he's now the convicted, but you'd have to sit in the foyer with him there, with your mother there, pretending you don't exist. You know what I mean? Very, very difficult to do that. So we were extremely fortunate that we did have the use of that room. And the lady who came with us every day to court, she went out and got our lunch for us at lunchtime so that we wouldn't
she
have
helps.
To go out and be
yeah.
dealing with anybody.
Okay.
Just the support from her was just invaluable. And I wish everybody had someone like her to go to court with them. Well, you know, she yeah. just, it was amazing.
Miriam, how did your brother plead?
So he pled not guilty.
On all charges?
Yeah, on all charges.
In
yeah.
And in both cases, in the case of yourself and your sister?
In both.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. He pled not guilty in both, yeah.
And despite that, he was convicted of habitual sexual assault of both you and your
yeah.
sister when you were children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was, yeah.
Your brother was convicted last week and received a suspended sentence. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Fully suspended sentence.
Fully suspended, yes. So he got an 18-month sentence suspended for 3 years, and he's been put on the sex offenders register for 3 years. One of the biggest issues that we had with the whole court process was the use of character references. We read out our victim impact statements, and I think most people would think that's probably what the trial ends on. Mm. You know, the words of the victims. It's your only chance to speak freely. Everything else you say in the courtroom is tied to your Garda statements. So it's your only chance to speak freely about your experience, how it's affected you, and how it still affects you. So after we read out our victim impact statements, and also just to be clear, this was after he had been found guilty, two character references were handed in and they were read out loud in the courtroom. One of them was from his wife and one of them was from his father-in-law. And the two character references were read out not only at that point, and I know a lot of people think judges don't put a lot of weight in them. However, when the judge was giving her judgment, the sentencing, she specifically mentioned parts of those character references as mitigating circumstances, and she actually read snippets from those character references in her judgment.
Okay.
So not only did we have to hear them once, we then heard them twice.
Now,
all
I know
these platitudes
that,
about our brother, you know.
And I know that's extremely difficult. I know that a lot of people often mention that, but I suppose with this position and the way the law is at the moment, they are perfectly entitled to do that. That is the legal system that we have. I know that it's, and character references are something that are always a very controversial point and a bone of contention for a lot of people, and I fully accept that. But with the legal system the way it is, people are perfectly entitled to do that. I know there had been some discussion last year about cross
it, it actually it it actually is changing, just to say.
That's what I was just about to make, so, that point. Yeah.
This... Yeah. So where the legislation is at the moment is it's just awaiting signature by the president and then a commencement date.
And then
but that could still be a way off.
Yeah. And people then, I suppose, giving character references in rape or sexual abuse cases could then face the prospect of being cross-examined on the stand too.
Yeah. Miriam, it has to be sworn in and be cross-examined. Yeah, yeah.
Which might actually in the future deter people. I know that's something we spoke about here on the show before. Can I just ask you finally, Miriam, for you now, can you start to move on with your life after the sentencing or
the closed chapter? I think so, yeah. It's not a closed chapter, I don't think, not just yet, but certainly, you know, I'm going back into counselling, and you know, obviously there's a lot to unpack from the experience of the justice system itself. And then obviously the sentencing and all of that and everything that came about with the family dynamics in court. But, you know, I am going to start to move on, but it's not a chapter that's closed just yet, you know.
Well, Miriam, I really appreciate your time here on the programme today and thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
That's no problem. Thanks very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.